Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Hi, everyone. It's Jonas here from Retro Game Evil, and you're listening to the Pixel Pie podcast.
Hello, Jonas.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing, mate?
I'm fantastic, buddy. I really appreciate you sitting down to have this chat with me. I appreciate where you are, and I've kind of like said, hey, I'm ready to go. And you're like, okay, it's like a 7:15 in the morning as we record this for you.
Yeah, that's correct.
Dude, that's commitment. Thank you so much. I'm usually the one getting up super early for people. It's actually about 5:30 p.m. on the same day at my place. So luxury. I'm enjoying this one.
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, you're still not in the future. In a couple of hours.
Yeah. As I always say, you're gonna we still don't have hoverboards, so don't go crazy. It's all good.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah, I know. So sad. So, buddy.
You give me a heads up next time.
I will. You'll be the first to know. So, Jonas, retrogame.evo on Instagram. You're a busy boy. A lot of Pokemon, a lot of Game Boy stuff. But the first thing I need to kind of work out is, so you're Jonas from Brazil, living in Glasgow, Scotland. So let's...
Because correct.
I'm discombobulated. Let's work through that first.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, so I was born and raised in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then in 2014, actually, I moved to England first to do my PhD. So I'm a biologist.
Oh, wow.
And so I did my undergrad in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I did my master's degree in Brazil.
Wow.
And then I was fortunate to get a scholarship to do my PhD in England. So I moved to Leeds first. Mm-hmm. I stayed there for 4 years. And then soon after I finished my PhD, I managed to get a position at the University of Glasgow as a full-time researcher. And that's why I moved to here.
Holy cow. That's really great. Because I mean, it's a funny kind of industry, I guess, biology. It's probably tricky to get a job, but then to get a job, you know, in another country, you know, at a university, like it's a bit of a dream walk, that one, isn't it?
It's crazy. I still cannot believe. And it's really, really good for us. Like my wife now is doing her PhD here at the University of Glasgow as well.
Right. And is your wife a Brazilian native?
She's a Brazilian as well.
Right. Okay.
So we moved together when I came to do my PhD. But then now she got a scholarship here at the University of Glasgow. So she's also doing her PhD.
I'm going to just take a wild guess that since you've been doing a PhD and your wife's now doing a PhD and you're both very busy in the education stream, you don't have any children.
And we don't have any children.
We have two kids. No one else can see. I can see behind you, and your room is much like my room. It's filled with all sorts of cool stuff. You are your children, right?
Exactly. Yeah. At the moment, you're correct. I have two cats.
Okay.
Yeah, but no children.
Yeah.
But I received a new ultimatum like 6 months ago. I was like, oh, you know, 2 years from now, we're going to have a baby.
And
I was
all
right, that's fine.
Oh, and you're both scientists. It's almost a bit, I imagine it's a bit like a Big Bang episode kind of thing. You know, it's like
exactly
plans and there's all sorts of regimes and... So does that mean, do you think you'll still, I mean, 2 years is a long way away, but based on kind of what you've done with, say, Game Boys and retro gaming, Do you think, is there something in 2 years, even though the children will take up some time, you'll still be keen on all this, what you're doing now?
I hope so. Definitely a little bit less involved.
Yeah.
But I would hate to like lose this bit of my piece of childhood that I found because of COVID. Because pre-COVID, I was totally out of this community.
Mm.
And I found this small little children inside of me again, and that was great.
Beautiful.
That was the only good thing about COVID.
yeah, that is awesome. All right. So now there's a fairly strong vein of Pokemon through everything that you do. I think kind of your age group, I'm just a little bit older and I wasn't at all immersed in, I didn't really know what Pokemon was until about, to be honest, I knew what it was, but it was only 3 or 4 years ago having a child. Like, well, my daughter's 10 now, but when she's about 6 or 7, you know, we went to Japan and she's like, Pokemon, Pokemon. I was like, that's kind of cool. You know, I was more of a Star Wars kid, you know, Knight Rider and the A-Team and things like that. That's sort of early 80s. Pokemon, I think Pokemon were invented yet. And
early 90s.
Yeah, your age group is definitely like, it's just the Pokemon train is just full steam ahead. And it's very apparent in all of your Instagram and, you know, a lot of the Game Boy stuff. So, yeah, I mean,
that's very true. That's very true.
You had so when it was like, when it was happening, when it was the real thing, you were there, right?
Yeah. So I'm a late 80s. So I was born in 87.
Right.
So I'm kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Like when things start to shift from.
Yeah.
Your age group to the new people, like people that are a little bit younger than me.
Yeah,
but so I get a little bit of both.
But you were born like that late 80s, and then you had 2 or 3 years for your thumbs to learn how to work.
Exactly,
and you were just good to go. Then the Game Boy just lands, and you're like, "Yeah, this is what I was." Did you get?
But I was in Brazil, so that's the caveat here because I was in Brazil, and video games were not very accessible there.
Right.
So it took me quite a few years to actually start to play and etc.
Yeah.
Compared to other people.
Yeah. There's a funny thing with like, I believe the Mega Drive, I think the Mega Drive was the last place the Mega Drive was built was in Brazil.
Actually, this is a very funny story.
It's really crazy.
No, it's very funny because Brazil and I think India, they are the only two places in the world that Sega actually won the run against Nintendo.
Right.
So when I was growing up,
Sega
was much stronger than Nintendo in Brazil. Yeah, like you would see Mega Drive selling everywhere.
Yeah.
And it was very hard. So for instance, the NES, the Nintendo.
Yeah.
That was a no-go in Brazil. Never existed.
Weird, hey.
Like the Super Nintendo was the first one to arrive in Brazil.
And therefore, not a lot of Game Boy either. Is that what you're saying too?
No, definitely no. Like mine, I only got a Game Boy because it was a gift. Because my mom's sister, she was actually living in America at the time. She was doing her PhD there.
Yeah, right.
And then when she came back to Brazil, I asked my mom, I want one of those new Nintendo small little things. And it was actually a Game Boy Color. So that was my first video game.
Okay.
Game Boy Color.
Cool.
From Nintendo.
Yeah. So was there like other, what were the kind of handhelds you had growing up? Because obviously you had like the Game Gear from Sega. Like, and I think the Nomad, did you see those instead?
No. I've never seen a Nomad in Brazil, but the Game Gear, Game Gear, we have them around. Mm-hmm. But actually, my first experience with a video game, it was also a handheld, but one of those massive ones from the early 80s.
Right.
They call it like tabletop video game.
Yeah,
it's actually, it's from a company called Bambino. It's called Bambino Safari.
Yeah.
It's very funny. It's like a big, big round disc with a very tiny little screen.
Right.
And you play a game. It's like a Pac-Man style video game where you walk out with a cage and then
I think I remember seeing that. There was so many.
So that was my first experience with a video game. And I was very young. It was my uncle's. video game. Right.
What about arcades in growing up Brazil?
Yeah, that was big.
Yeah,
it was big.
Big arcades.
It was big. Yeah. I was everywhere. Arcades everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I was, I was a big fan of arcades.
Yeah, I know it's sort of a few years later, but I always hear these stories of this group of Brazilians that will just rock up, you know, like in the 90s and 2000s, that rock up to like a Mortal Kombat or a Street Fighter competition and just destroy, you know, like these kind of, they're probably like all jiu-jitsu dudes in real life, but they kind of just rock, just rock up out of nowhere at like Galloping Ghost, even in the last sort of decade. Destroy at fighting games. So there's something in the water for sure.
Yeah, it was big. Like every single, I grew up in a very small city in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think we had like 6 or 7 different arcade places in the city.
Wow.
And it was a small city.
Mm.
So it was awesome. It was awesome.
I get
that. That was the easiest way to get to play video games actually at the time in Brazil.
I get the impression that having not been there, having not been to, I haven't been to Europe or South America in any way, shape or form. But I sort of get the impression that Brazil has a lot of, you know, when you grew up outdoors, you know, and in town, and a lot of sort of, I don't want to sound stereotype, but a lot of street food, a lot of restaurants and sort of just being outside, out of the house and, bars and just living your life. It's very colorful. Absolutely. And those bloody, was it Vuvuzela or whatever, those bloody horns at the football? I remember the Brazilian World Cup. Even on your TV, drive you crazy. Beautiful.
That's true.
It's good you've got a fond memory of it all.
Yeah, that's very true. It's fantastic.
And so what sort of led you towards biology growing up in Brazil? Did you see a fish one day, or a rabbit on the side of the road, or was it human biology? What kind of drew you down that path?
So actually, my whole family from the side of my mom, they are all in academia, so they all work at university,
right?
And my dad as well, my dad's in academia.
Yep.
And
what did they specialize in?
Yeah, so it varies.
Right.
So my dad is a food scientist.
Oh, okay.
But my granddad, he was a phytopathologist. So he's studying disease of plants.
Right.
And he was a big influence in my life. Mm. So I think it was because of him that I was like, oh, do you know what? I want to do biology.
Mm.
But I end up in a completely different path. Mm. I work in molecular and cell biology. And a little bit of genetics.
Okay.
But with plants, I use plants as a model.
Right.
So no human biology, no animal biology.
Right. So does that, in the current state of COVID pandemic, all the nasty words, is that something that you're kind of part of, or like is that in your wheelhouse at all? That kind of genetics and virals and mRNAs and
that sort of stuff? Yeah, these are things that I understand.
Right.
And because it's part of my portfolio of knowledge as a molecular biologist and a little bit of geneticist, but it's not something that I work on.
Okay. That's probably good because it could be either frustrating or scary or anything. It's a bit like when you meet people that are all about like germs and things, and you talk to them and they're like, I will never swim in a public pool. I won't do this. I won't do that. Because they know exactly what's in there. And we're all cool with it because we don't know. We're just like, ignorance is bliss. And these people are like, I don't use buses. I don't swim in pools. The amount of disgusting crap that's out there, you have no idea. I'm like, I don't want to hear about it. I like pools and I like catching buses. It's fine.
Yeah, that's my dad with food, because he's a food scientist. He's like, I don't eat this, I don't eat that, and I'm never going to eat this because of that. And I was like, don't tell me, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. And what your grandfather was into, like plant disease, was that kind of more around like crops and things like that, or just?
Yeah, mostly with coffee, actually.
Agriculture, yeah, right.
So he was a big name studying coffee disease in the country.
Of course,
he works for FAO.
Coffee. Mm.
Exactly. So he worked for FAO, traveled around the world. And I think this was something that really inspired me to actually get in academia, because I would see. So he went to Japan, I don't know, 5-10 times, between 5 and 10 times during his life. And he always would bring me stuff from Japan. I was like, oh, that's so cool, because it's so wicked. Different.
Yeah,
and really inspired me to to become a scientist as well, because of this opportunity. Because we always, not now because of COVID, but we always have the chance to go and travel for conferences, to give talks and etc. And it's really good. It's one of the best parts of being in academia.
That's awesome. And then though I can't help but kind of point out the contrast in the climate between Brazil and Glasgow
and Scotland.
How do you I mean, obviously, you had a bit of, I don't know if it's a transition. You went through England.
There's no transition. It's a hard change.
And how do you find that sort of, you know, how long have you been? Was it 2014 when you went?
2014. Right, 2014. Okay.
So I guess those first couple of years, I mean, I know a few Australians had gone over as to the UK as teachers and to do with sports coaching and stuff. And they're kind of like, man, the first year and a half, you've just got to kind of focus on work. It can get you down a bit, because they used to, you know, you've seen Bondi Rescue and Neighbours and stuff. The sun's always shining, and much like your weather, you know, when you go there. So how did your wife and you sort of get through all that, like immigrating into that?
It was hard. Like in the beginning, I think what the worst part was this big difference in the light dark period for us, because growing up in Brazil, both of us, we were very used to the 12-12 hours of light, 12 hours of dark, perfect. And then when we arrived here, was winter,
right?
And we were planning everything. Oh, so we're going to land in, we arrived in Manchester. So, all right. So our plane will land in Manchester. It's going to be 4 p.m. It was December. Like, so that's plenty of light for us to get a taxi and find a hotel and et cetera. And then when it landed, it was dark. I was like, what the hell? I completely forgot about the light change. The first year was a little bit crazy, like this very long summer and very like massive days, like 10 p.m. is still a little bit of sun in the sky. I was like, that's crazy.
Amazing. All right, well, let's talk about Game Boys and stuff then, shall we?
Absolutely.
So you alluded to before that it was I think like a bunch of us that once sort of COVID hit, we all kind of had to look for something to do. It sounds like that was a little bit of a trigger into why you kind of got right into Game Boys. And I mean, can you sort of take me back to, I guess, when it first started? Did you already have a couple? Were you into other things and you sort of thought, I'm going to really crack into this?
So when COVID started, I had a Nintendo Switch.
Right.
I had a Switch, and that's it. In regards to video games, that's it. I had a Switch.
No Segas, no NESs.
Nothing. I had nothing. Wow. And I have another hobby, which is a card game called Magic the Gathering.
Right. Yeah. I'm aware of this.
And I was really, I started to play Magic when I was very, very young. And I brought my collection from Brazil to here. So I was really into Magic. Like I was playing once a week, going to the store, playing tournaments. That was great.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit. When COVID started, we're all like the first lockdown in UK was quite hardcore. So we're all literally locked down. Like you could go out only like for 1 hour a day to do some exercises or do some shopping. And I am a very active person. And I love to be around of people. So I was going a little bit crazy inside the house. Like I was really, really struggling with it. My mental health was really, really bad. And then one day I was going to YouTube, and then I found I think the first video that I saw was from was Sean from Esoteric Mods. And then I found a few videos from the Retro Future.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, a Game Boy. I want to play Game Boy again. And then I went to Facebook Marketplace. I was like, oh, there's one nearby here, £10.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, this, yeah, 10,000. Yeah. Oh, that's great. So I went, it was a Game Boy, a purple Game Boy Color with Pokemon Red. And it was £10 for the Game Boy, £10 for the Pokemon Red. I was like, oh, that's perfect. That's all I need. So,
geez, you want £20 for this old thing? That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
And then I went there. Yeah, I grab it. And then I go home. I put the game in, put some batteries. Like, oh, this screen is crap. I cannot see anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well, because you don't remember those things. Like, I never remember from my childhood. And then I start to dig more about modding them and it's snowball definitely.
My experience was sort of similar. About it was actually about 3 or 4 years ago, before COVID and before I really gave a crap about any of the stuff, and I picked up it's in great condition, an SP, but a 001. And like, if you, it's, the shell is in perfect condition, the whole Game Boy itself is in near perfect condition. If you try to pick this thing up now, it's probably about $150, and I paid like 80 for it in box. And I was like, wow, this is gonna be great. And I bought up a game and I stuck it in. I was like, this is broken, yeah, is this broken? And he's like, no man, that's what Game Boys were like. And he had a 101, so we're like, that's a little better, but I think it is an old screen. I've seen a few people do like a TFT or whatever the original style screen is, and they do come up pretty good. But yeah, it's alarming the first time, and you sort of go, I mean, since then I bought a bunch of colors and stuff. I have, like, you know, you can see behind me, it's a bunch of pockets and there's a bunch of colors up there. And even then you still put them on and you're like, wow, we're so spoiled.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
So did you mod that one?
I did mod that one. Yeah.
And that was kind of like the penny dropped, and
that was
like
the beginning. Oh, that was the beginning. Yeah.
Mm. Are you the sort to? Yep. Keep going.
Then I got an SP, and then I mod the SP.
Yeah.
And that one was really, really good. Like, because the first mod for the Game Boy Color when I started was the small TFT screen.
Right. And the Ben Van one, was it?
Yeah. And then, but for the SP. Yeah. Was already an IPS screen, an IPS display. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And
yeah.
You've got a lot of console stuff behind you too. We're kind of talking about before we start recording, like N64 and NES and things like that. Is that stuff again? Because you said you only had a Switch.
Yeah, exactly. So things, my wife, she always reminds me that things, these, it snowballed a little bit crazy because it kind of triggered me, because Nintendo was big, even though, as we were talking, like, it was a rare thing in Brazil, because I had family always living abroad. So all my cousins, they always came back with Nintendo stuff from America.
Right.
And I was always fascinated about it, and I always loved it.
Yeah.
So I remember when my cousin came back and he had the Nintendo 64, and we were going to play Mario at his place, and we spend like the whole weekend play Mario there.
Yeah.
So when COVID started, I started to look around Glasgow, and at the beginning, like March, April 2020, things, they were relatively quite cheap still.
Yeah.
So I managed to grab a lot of those box video games that you see here on the back.
Yeah.
All around me for fairly cheap, very nice prices. Mm. Nowadays, not so much. But it all depends. You need to look for. For instance, the box Nintendo 64 that you see there, I actually got it from CEX.
Right, yeah.
And it was £80 and fully boxed, complete, everything, fantastic condition. So it was actually quite cheap.
Yeah. I'm sure there's bargains out there. You got to find the ones that you just got to get in quick these days, don't you? I mean, it's there.
Yeah. But I stopped to look now because prices are insane at the moment.
Agreed. I don't look anymore either. If I get most of my stuff from j4u.com. There's my secret.
Yeah.
I'm not a big bloody kind of like gatherer. I know I see some of the people and they're kind of, oh, a new shipment, and they got like 30 Game Boys, and they've got a guy, I'm holding my fingers up, they've got a guy in Japan that just, you know, everybody's got their process, but they've just contacted someone via eBay and said, I'd like to buy a lot. And they form that relationship. And that's, if you're doing that, it's, but for someone like myself that just, you know, gets, I got a beautiful shell from Kiki recently, the Metroid GBC. And I'm like, I got that. And I've got a DMG that I want to reshell, this user shell. So I just buy, you know, I can get it for like 55, 60 bucks. Might have to put a speaker in them, clean the buttons, a power switch, and
yeah,
get three Game Boys for sort of like well under $200. You know, if I try and buy any Game Boy and I go on about it, around me, in almost any condition, this thing could look like it's been dumped in mud and doesn't turn on any model, and people want $100. And you're like, I know you think, I know you think you got something great, but you don't. You're just being greedy. So I think the bubble.
I've never bought anything from Japan. I've seen.
I think it will here for sure in Australia, because it's, I don't think we've quite got the society that's, you know, we're all, Australians in general, more interested in drinking beer and driving V8s and stuff. So eventually those people will realize it's not worth $100. I'm not going to sell it. So, yeah. Where do you get most of yours from? Because you do a lot of work. I mean, you're doing a lot of reshells and a lot of clean bills.
Locally,
and,
Everything locally, sometimes it from England. That's probably the few that I got the furthest away. They come from England. People ship to me, but yeah, I always thought about buying them from Japan. I see some people buying them, but I've never got around. Like, there's Sendico service, but apparently you need to buy a lot of them at the same time, get like a shipment. I was like,
it's got a lot of working gears, that as well. There's a few, unless you've done it several times, I think there's a few dice to roll on taxes, and it could come from here, and you could end up with, if you're going to buy 60, I mean, I've talked to a few people and they had like, you know, $2,000 worth of Game Boys. I was like, that's a lot of money to allocate. I don't want $2,000 worth of Game Boys unless it's like two really great Game Boys, and even then I'm not spending that much. But
yeah, like if I was selling the Game Boys, I would probably buy more. But I think I only sold three Game Boys, and I did raffles for them. The rest, they're all here. Here is the shelf. So behind me, you see it's all boxed consoles.
Yeah, and then
on
a lot.
On the other side here, I have a small little one with just modded Game Boys. And these are basically Game Boys that I play.
Yeah.
And I think 90% of the things, or even more, that you're going to see on my Instagram, they're all mine.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Because a lot of people, I would say that probably 75% of the people that I've had on and had a conversation with, like we are now, that mod and create, most of the, due to whether it be storage, or they're just not the kind, they're not the collector type, they're just purely creative. Sure. And they're like, once I've made it, I've made it, and I'm happy to give it away, swap it, raffle it, whatever. But yeah, people like yourself that hang on to them, like I'm the same. There's nothing I could get rid of, because A, I don't create a lot, but B, I did it because I wanted it, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I get attached to them. I look at they look so cool. I don't want to send it away.
Yeah,
like for instance, I have one of the Joseph Beska pockets.
I was just about to bring it up.
And I made a custom, I designed a custom lenses to it. Yeah. And then I made a custom sticker and I put it in. I was planning to sell it. And then I look at it and I was like, I'm not going to sell this. Yeah. It looks so good. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, the pocket is a really sweet one. Did you get one of the Game Boy Color versions, the resin versions?
No. I want to.
It really is.
I was actually talking.
It's the best one. It's so crisp. It's I mean, I've got the pocket. I managed to get a DMG out of him.
Yeah, you have the GMD, legendary.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a rarity. That one's pretty neat. And I got early on the GBC, and it's, you know, if I have all three of them sitting, like that's why I'm looking over here, because I'm looking at all three of them sitting there.
Yeah.
And the lines and everything on the GBC, the buttons, it's by far the most crisp final result. Be great if he could manage to sort of get some casts of the pocket and the DMG. That's a lot of work for yesterday's tech, but
that's true.
By far the best is that.
I would love to have a pocket. So I could have a pocket collar, make a pocket collar. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. I think just sort of flicking through your Insta now, one that I really like, because it's right in my wheelhouse, is the Ghostbusters, the Slimer GBC.
The Slimer.
Yeah. it's like, I mean, I could I did a little pocket for my daughter with a splatter from the inside. Really cool fun. Really enjoyed making it. And so I could see myself doing this GBC, but the lens and the rear sticker is it's that kind of yellow and black, like the trap. That's really cool.
Yeah,
the,
so this
sticker's neat.
I'm no painter at all. Yeah. So this was for the Modern Game Boy Club monthly competition.
Right.
And every single painted Game Boy that I have here, I got them all from Mad Mods because the guy is brilliant.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he is.
So as soon as they announced the October competition for Halloween, I messaged Matt. And Matt, I want to do a Slimer.
Yeah.
So what I want is a splatter effect, and I want to have a little bit of glow in the dark.
Yeah.
Go nuts. Yep.
Looks good.
And then I made the lens overlay, and the custom cut to go with it, just to make it a little bit like a timed up thing. Like made the pixel Slimer.
Oh, so you did that cut. You did that cut yourself.
Yeah,
that's cool. Cool. I see you also dabble in the cartridge labels a bit too, huh?
Yeah, so I think this is the scientist inside of me.
Right.
Every time I see something cool, I need to give it a go.
Hmm.
I try a little bit of everything. So the first thing that I try when I start the Instagram was painting, because when I started my Instagram, I saw Kelly, mm-hmm. Next Stop,
mm-hmm.
Marble painting job. And I was like, that's awesome. So actually, this is one of the things that I hate on Instagram, because you cannot quickly scroll down to like the first photo that you ever posted. But the first photo that I ever posted was a macro that I did with a marble paint on it.
Yeah.
That one came up quite nice, but... Yeah. It was very hard to get it done. And I was like, quickly realized that I'm no painter. I cannot paint. So let's move to another thing. And that's when I started to make the custom buttons, because I saw there was a lot of people doing UV printing and painting the cards. It's like, oh, there's kind of a lack of customization on the buttons.
Mm.
And then I start to make the custom buttons. And I did it for quite a while. I still have quite a bunch here. I want to do more of them. But then I got a Cricut machine. I was like, oh, I'm gonna give it a go to make some stickers.
That's a little vinyl cutter thing.
The vinyl cutter thing.
Yeah, right.
And I love photography as a hobby.
Yeah.
Not so much like a product photography, mm-hmm. but landscape photography. Like my personal Instagram is all about landscape photography.
Yeah.
So I have a quite good printer here at home.
Right.
And I was like, I'm going to give it a go to make the stickers. So it was a learning curve.
Yeah.
Like the first ones that I did, they were not so great. And then I start to get more into like investigating about it, and got a lot of help from TL hand modeling.
Yeah.
About making these stickers, testing different types of vinyl, overlays and stuff like that. And I really enjoy making them. It's very fun.
Mm.
And then talking with David from Nintendo DIY, I think like a month ago or so, I don't know why we started discussion, and then he was like, oh, you think you can do a lens overlay? And I was like, yeah, dude, I think I can. Because at that time I had done a few of these.
The micro
overlays. Yeah. And David was like, oh, do you think you can do a lens overlay? I think, yeah, I think I can do it. So I just made a template for the Game Boy TFT. And mm-hmm. then I made the template for all the other consoles. And then I started to print them. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like that.
So instead of doing a custom lens, you're just using effectively a sticker that you stick on.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like it. I recently started playing around with water slides, and I had ambitions to achieve a few things. And I kind of looked at it and I thought, if you had a Cricut, it'd be a really nice way, because like, and you went and did it the other day, but obviously with the vinyl, Evangelion GBA.
That's all vinyl.
And I was always like, you know, if I could get this done with a Cricut, like as a water slide, because one of your comments was something along the lines of, I don't know if I could get it right because it's just so fine. With a water slide, you'd have all that. They were talking about wet application. I was like,
yeah.
With a water slide, you'd have plenty of
time.
You
can move it around.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, this dude's done it. But then I realized you'd done vinyl, but you've still done it. But yeah, I still am curious with the water slide.
And
we just need to cut all the holes people, out.
Yeah, like some people, they did ask me about it. I was like, look, if you want me to make one of these, I can make you one of these. But it's very fiddly. It's not easy to apply.
I will wreck every sticker I ever put on.
So like the ones that I'm using now, they have a very, very thick overlay.
Mm.
They have like a leather texture to it.
Right.
And they are very, very resistant to scratching itself. So it actually makes the sticker super malleable.
Right.
So it doesn't tear very easily.
And stretch and stuff. And
yeah, and it's very, very hard to break them.
Mm.
But if you look at the photo of the Evangelion one, you're going to see that in the top part where you have the Nintendo logo,
yeah,
that's open. It's separated. It's right. Not linked. So actually the sticker is like a U shape or yes, a C shape. So it's not a single, it's a single piece, but it's an open-ended single piece.
Yeah.
So that one was quite tricky to apply. The lens ones, they're not so bad. They're quite easy to apply, but the console ones.
It still gives you a lot of, even if you were to do like little panels here and there, it still leaves you a lot of opportunities. Like, you know, like where you've, so you've skipped around the speaker grill, you know, like, it's not hard to kind of just make that side into, you could have almost just done a line down the middle and made it two halves, you know, and I guess you can give people the opportunities, like when you order it, you know, whatever your cost is, I will sell you like two of everything.
Because, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Because most we're of only the time human and it gives it's them possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Exactly. So for instance, this one here, that's very easy to apply. The pocket. I'm showing it's called the pocket with the Zelda. You can see the photo on my Instagram.
Yeah, right. So that's a vinyl, that's a label sticker.
It's a vinyl as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. And yeah, right. Again, you left Nintendo out and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one is quite easy to apply because the things they naturally align very easily.
Yeah.
So the way I design it is kind of foolproof because of the Nintendo logo.
I will test that theory for you, my friend.
Because of the opening of the Nintendo logo,
you
kind of drop it in place.
Yeah, and you got the bottom of the lens to kind of like parallel against and things like
that. Yeah, we're gonna test it because I'm sending William and Gavin a few of those. Soon I'm gonna send you as well, and then you guys can test and tell me
how it is. Sure. You want a foolproof? I'm your fool. That works. Yeah, cool. That's really cool. I mean, the painting and stuff is great, but yeah, I mean, that's got to be a different way of going about it. And it's really endless, you know, especially the lens overlay. Like I've spoken to a few people about getting custom lenses done. And I guess these days with the way things are moving so quickly with screens and lenses, and every second screen's like 6% bigger and
bigger, exactly.
Trying to get lenses done. And you're like, you know what? All I got to do is just, I've already got the template to print and cut out. I just cut a bit more out of the image and I'm there. You know, I don't have to worry about it.
Mm. Yeah. Like UV printing is awesome, but it's also, I still think that it's a little bit too expensive at the moment. Right.
Yeah, what do you mean? Like to just buy a shell that's been UV printed?
Printed, yeah.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
If you wanted to custom made, it's still a little bit too expensive. And I like to play with a lot of different designs. Mm. So I get bored of things very quickly. So for my personal use, I like these stickers because I made this pocket themed around Zelda. I'm going to stick to it and play with it for like a month or two, and then I was like, actually I would like to have it themed around, I don't know, Mega Man.
Right.
Just rip off the sticker,
yeah,
drop another one.
Hey, that's cool. You know what you could do is you could do like a club, like a subscription. So like every month they just get a random
new sticker
and you don't know what's coming. You just get a new sticker. That'd be pretty cool, you know. You just, and then maybe some other bits and pieces, other stickers and things. But yeah, like a like a Game Boy Overlay Monthly Club, you know, when they do those meat things and you don't know what type of animal's going to turn up in your box or whatever.
A good idea.
Some of the lenses, some of the cartridge labels are really good. I'm, even though I'm terrible, I'm fond of Tetris and the hollow Tetris lens, cart label that you've got there. Obviously, it's a still image, but I can just imagine that, you know, moving, you would just look so
it's very
shimmery.
Yeah, if you look at the Metroid one, it will have the same effect as the Metroid one.
Right. Is that the recent GBA one?
No, if you go down a little bit.
Oh, yes, I see it. The Game
there's
Boy
a Metroid cart.
Oh yeah, look at that, baby.
There's a Game Boy Metroid cart. And then you can see that it's quite the holographic effect's quite nice.
There's a few people that do Trey does a really good one, TL Hand Modding, and Kelly does a really nice one. And both times I've kind of gone, I would love to get one of these, and now I get a price like a Metroid cartridge. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, like so expensive just to buy a Metroid cartridge. So I could put the label on a cart, but it wouldn't be the same. But
yeah,
it would probably also cost me about five times the price of the label to have it shipped to me because it's ridiculous at the moment, shipping.
To Australia?
Oh, yes. Bonkers. Bonkers, mate. It's every year, $100 to $50 to $100 to get almost anything to you these days. Yeah. The bigger companies, you know, if you're going with Handheld Legend and stuff, but individuals and stuff. I know Kiki tried to help me out and send me that Samus shell, and it didn't even make it. It's floated around for 6 weeks and then got sent back to her. It was bonkers, and she managed to help me out with someone else. So Kiki is the best.
I love her shells. They're fantastic. Yeah,
it's so great. Cool. I wish I could have an original, but at the moment, just having something that I know there's a lot of people out there that really support each other and, you know, have a lot of shells of each other's stuff. And it'd be so great to be able to kind of afford that or have something that I could offer them in return. But some people have just done some amazing art on Game Boy shells, and I don't play them. I just want to have them here in my little castle of awesomeness. Yeah,
like Julianne from Gameboy.777, she's doing some beautiful shells at the moment.
Yeah.
Using like the alcohol ink or something like that. Oh, it's right. Fantastic. Yeah. So beautiful.
Before you were talking about custom buttons. Now, is that like you're actually putting images on the buttons?
Yeah, so the way it works is if we imagine a button of any of the Game Boy consoles, they always have this shape, right? They're all concave.
Convex.
They're all convex. They're all rounded on the top.
Yeah.
So basically what I do, I shave the top manually to make them flat.
So sand it off sort of thing or something?
I sand it off,
Yeah.
So they need to be perfectly flat.
Right.
And then I print at very high resolution a very small little design, whatever. Mm-hmm. That design is applied to a little bit thicker plastic,
right?
Like piece of white plastic.
Yeah.
Then I paint the surrounding of the plastic black to make this the depth effect.
Yeah.
I glue that to the top of the button, and then when that's all done, I go with resin.
Yeah.
And I use the physics of surface tension.
Yeah, viscosity and so on.
Viscosity.
Yeah.
So I very, very gently apply bits and bits of resin very slowly until it makes a perfect dome surrounding there.
Wow.
And then I let them dry for 72 hours and hope for the best, because sometimes there are bubbles that form and sometimes
strip over the side or something,
and then you just need to start over. You get rid of it and start again.
Some really cool ones, like really, and probably the ones that get my eye.
It's super fun to do.
The ones you did with just the radioactive symbol, you know, there's some Pocket Pirate stuff and a bunch of Pokemon stuff, and like that's just super bling. And it looks like down here I'm not sure if that's colored. It's a blue Game Boy color. Have you got LEDs behind those, or are they, that's just the color? It's like a blue heart and a, I'm not sure what that from a game or something. It's a fair way back when you're really like into the button thing. Maybe Let me see. Kingdom Hearts or something. It's a blue Game Boy.
Kingdom Hearts, yeah.
Yeah. I'm only guessing because it's all usually related to something. A lot of good Metroid work there, which is always encouraged.
Oh, yeah. The Metroid one is awesome. It's one of my favorites that I made.
Especially, I think you got the little Metroid button looks so good. I mean, they're so vibrant. They look like they're lit from behind because you've got that plastic behind them to really
exactly
get light through them.
Yeah. Amazing. So I did play a little bit with using translucent or transparent buttons,
yeah,
and then put a LED behind them.
Yeah.
So, but the way I wanted to do is to actually black out completely the design so that the light would come from the sides and not to the design.
Yeah.
It was all right. It was not too bad, but I've never got around continue to do it. I do want to do more of the buttons. I love doing them because it's quite a peaceful thing. It's like almost like playing with a small miniatures.
Yeah,
where you need to make the paint those tiny little things. It's very a lot of detail work.
Yeah, there's a sort of science experiment slash presentation-y thing on somewhere, and it's like this. You probably heard of it. It's like a tar drip. And it's like this, it's in a big glass box. It's all kind of, hermetically sealed or whatever. It's not a vacuum, but it's very sterile. It's a controlled temperature.
Yeah.
And I imagine it looks like a fish tank that's about sort of, I don't know, about 3 feet high and about 2 feet square. And inside it at the top is this like some sort of like natural tar and like a stalagmite down. And it's slowly comes down, and eventually there'll be a doop, like a drop.
Doop, a drip, yeah.
And I think this thing drips like every 7 years or something. And every now and then, it's got a webcam, and every now and then you'll hear it. It'll come up like any day now, it's going to drip. And it's just like, my gosh.
Yeah, Why would you tell me such a thing? Now I need to find it now.
Yeah, and what if I miss it? And yeah, I know. It's out there somewhere.
It's like have you seen that the big massive flower that only flowers like once every 7 years or 10 years, something like that? It's very disgusting, the smell.
Oh.
So there is one in the UK, like in the south of England. There's a place called
Botanical Garden or something.
Yeah, it's called the Eden Garden. It's a massive botanic garden in the south of England. And they have one of those flowers there. And I think it's supposed to flower next year or the year after. And I'm already, all right, I'm going to book a trip today. I'm going to stay there for 5 days just to see the flower flowering.
That's funny. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I guess, you know, you're leaning into the, you know, I'm a biologist. So when I see something, I give it a go because it's always like, you know, I'd like to know how this works, you know, especially, I mean, there's another macro here, which you call the bacon macro. It's a the red and white one with all the swirly cool stuff.
The marbly,
the marbling. Yeah, sorry, I forgot that. I've been meaning to give that a go. My daughter and I would stick all sorts of things, and I think our cat may end up a different color if we're not careful. And I did speak to Kelly about the I think it's called Marbo brand or something like that. And she's like, dude, just drop stuff in it. It's great. We watched a bunch of videos. I've seen people doing like patterns, like a carbon fiber pattern. So the tank.
So like, that's how I did. That's how I did with water. Yeah. That's how I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I've seen
spray paint,
like,
water.
They do like, you know, like motorcycle fairings. And I've seen dudes do like, I'm not into guns, but one of the videos that came up was like a hunting rifle. And they obviously took all the bits off it that didn't want it, or they masked it up and they dropped it in, and they'd laid like a sheet of kind of camouflage on the water. So when they dropped the weapon in, it comes out. It's like, you'd think that was how it was manufactured or how it was painted, but the carbon fiber on bits of bike fairings. And you're just like, holy cow, that is insane. So we've been meaning to give it a go.
It's awesome.
Yeah, but to hear you say I'm a biologist, and so when I see the button thing. I'm like, how's that work? And you kind of move on to the next, you know, piece of part of it that you can kind of do your little science experiments on, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I have a very active mind, so it's very hard for me to stay focused in one thing. And every time there is something new that shows up, I was like, oh, I need to give it a go. I need to try that. It's the little scientist inside of me.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are things that I really, really connect to, and I really enjoy doing them, like the buttons, these vinyl overlays. I really like doing them. Because the painting thing, I tried and was like, no, that's not my thing, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
The button thing, it must be a little bit, you kind of like put it off to the side where you know, okay, now no one's going to need this table.
No,
it's going to be bumped. He's like, all right, I need to do this when maybe first thing in the morning when everybody's going to be out of the house. So at least it gets that sort of 12 to 14 hours of like no possible human contact. You're talking to the cats. If you guys...
No dust.
You come in here. Yeah, no dust. When I was playing with the Game Boy, the Gundam, you know, the guys doing dioramas using resin for water and things like that. And, you know, they were doing all sorts of it. And you can just Google the crap out of it. People do like battleships in oceans and, you know, using the resin.
Yeah, I've seen. It's awesome.
Sometimes this resin will bite you because they would mix it. Like they would do like a rock face with a Gundam that's about, say, 6 to 8 inches high. And he's kind of like hiding in a cave. And they're going to pour like resin over it, like a bit of a waterfall down some rocks. And they get their mixture slightly off, or they buy a product they're not used to. And this thing just starts heating and destroying their diorama. Like resin is brutal. So whenever anybody
yeah, so there are the fumes that are produced, and I'm always scared about the cuts. So for instance, I really want to get into 3D printing. Right. And I want to get a resin printer.
Yeah.
But I know that it's quite messy.
Yeah.
And produce some fumes, and there are spillages, and the cats are going to go around.
Yeah.
So I might buy a normal filament printer.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I really, really want to do.
Yeah. I mean, there's a situation now where I bought a printer about, I think 4 years ago. And it's a cheap kind of like Prusa knockoff. And it's really served its purpose. I've got some really cool stuff. And I'm kind of at the point where like I'm ready to kind of fork out $400 to $500 on a new printer. And the resin market is really starting to create that. I could get a good printer for about $400. Probably my print size would be a bit smaller, which is probably fine. It's not a big thing. It's often just, you know, print like, you know, printed this little Totoro and, you know, like
so beautiful.
One of the aliens out of Predator and not Predator, out of...
That's so cool.
From
Metroid.
Yeah, and just bits and pieces like that, you know. So we're not asking for big results, but at the same time, just that fine detail. And again, it's the resin is smelly. I'd have to go into my kind of workshop / shed, which can get warm during summer. And then you got to cure it. And there's just all these processes where, like with PLA, I'm pretty sure I could get a nice printer that would have a higher resolution and do a good job that doesn't stink, and I throw a roll on it and I'm not too fussed about it. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah. It would be nice to meet someone that has 3 or 4 of everything and really see the results, because you can only watch enough YouTube and sort of go, I don't know if this dude got this $1,000 printer for free and he's going to say that. And I don't even know if that's what he printed on that, you know, so it's...
What would be great is, imagine like nowadays you go into a computer shop and then you have like 10 laptops all open, all running Windows, and then you can just go into each one of them and play a little bit and see how they go.
Yeah.
So in the future, it's going to be like this, you know, you're going to go into a shop and there's going to be like 10 printers all printing the same thing. Yeah. And then you just compare the results.
There's like a few
10 years from now.
There's a few places like that here in my city, Brisbane, but they're kind of like,
oh, really?
They're all the same brand. So it's realistically the small one up to the big one, and a few things kind of printed and stuff. But you want to kind of give them a model and go, all right, print this Totoro, you know, on these 5 different brands using the same slicer and sort of see what comes out. Yeah, but everything's just so like, I mean, mine, it took me about 6 hours to build, and I watched a bunch of YouTube, and, you know, it's been a few years, and you can not touch it for 6 months and come back to it, and it's all like doing stupid stuff. And you're like, last time we talked, everything was fine. And now you're being silly.
Well, that's the same for the vinyl cutter. Vinyl cutter is always like you cannot move it. If you move it, you lose calibration.
Yeah.
And then you go to cut it and then everything cuts weird. It was like, oh my God. Let's start over. So but the debate's gonna be even worse, I imagine.
Yeah, they're crazy, those crickets, aren't they? It was a real, I think there was sort of like the couple of years ago, the kind of like the crafty mums kind of picked them all up and kind of all of a sudden people were like, hey, this is really cool. And every hobby seems to have an application for a cricket now.
Yeah, even for PCB design or flat cable design and stuff like that, you can use it to like draw your circuit that, where you're gonna run things, and then you just put in on top of your PCB, and then you see how your flex cable is going to line up,
like a masking or something.
Yeah, like a masking. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, design your flex cable, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just cut it with the cricket in a vinyl. Then you just put on top of your PCB and then you see if everything's going to line up, all the solder points going to line up or not.
Yeah. I mean, the water slide stuff, it seems so easy. I mean, I've got this shell here, which is one of the UV printed Alien GBCs. And I mean, the print's just on the top. And like, as you know yourself, anybody that's modded a Game Boy, when the buttons are out and the lens is off, it's really not that kind of scary. And you know, like to a water slide like that, the cricket doesn't have to do a lot, and you just, water slides are so good to work with. It just sort of slaps on top and then you seal it, and that's that. I almost want a cricket just to play around.
Well, I have like sheets of water slide paper here. I never use them. I bought them and I never use them. I should give them a go.
Yeah, it's the printing, because I looked into it, like a lot of people use it for like, you know, for making like custom drinking bottles or flasks. You want to go, you know, dad's the best dad, you know, and his birth date, and you print it. And I looked at a lot of stuff that gets used with like people that customize like die cast cars, you know, like Hot Wheels and Matchbox, you know, and they'll get an old car and they'll clean it back and repaint it and put, you know, like dad's hot rod's little thing on the side. I've talked to a few people, and the stuff that I did, I think the water slide paper is just it's just too thick. So when I put it on as just like an individual sort of logo, you sort of look at it and you go, it was raised and it was quite clear that, oh, that's a sticker of some sort. It wasn't like a print. So it needs to be, I've got obviously all the Gundam stuff, like some of these water slides, it's just so paper thin. Like, so you need that thinner stuff. And then how does that go when a cricket's carving it up? Like, I think the thicker stuff would be okay. Like if you're just doing like an entire sort of front of a shell, because you're getting close to the buttons and all that sort of business. So good luck with that. That should be good if you do kind of pull it off.
Now I would definitely give it a go and see how it goes. But the what JMC Place did some crazy work with the water slide, and
definitely.
For me still today is like it's absolutely mental that he actually made that whole Bayside shell just with water slide.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's so good. So good.
OG for Shizzle. Yeah, man. So what else are you up to? I mean, do you have other hobbies that you sort of get into? Did you sell all your Magic Gathering cards to buy handhelds?
No.
Well, you're probably sitting on a lot of money still then, I imagine.
Well, yeah, so this is one of the scary things about the Magic cards, because it's insane the value of some of the cards, how they get values. Particularly there is something called the reserved list in Magic.
Right.
So these are very old cards that Wizards of the Coast signed a contract that they would never be reprinted.
Right.
So those cards, the price of those cards, it's like stocks. The price just goes up and up and up and up. And I was like, oh, that's insane. But I love Magic. For me, it's like one of the best games ever made, if not the best game ever made. Mm. It's so cool. I cannot wait to go and play it again, like physically. Not done in 3 years.
What's the state of human allow out stuff in Glasgow at the moment? Are you guys, what's the state of kind of lockdown as of today when we're talking?
it's almost everything back to the same, to normal. To be honest, you still need to wear face masks wherever you go. But everything is open. I think most of the people already got two doses of the vaccine. Particularly like if you're like older than 30, you definitely go, or at least a chance to, because some people decide not to get it. But
It's funny, isn't it? What sort of what changes in your life when you're, I mean, it's, you look at things like Netflix and all that, they must have just seen their numbers just go crazy because the seven-eighths of the world have just been stuck at home. You know, and it's funny talking to some people where they're like, I was talking to my grandmother the other day and she was like, oh, so you're telling me you're upset because you have to stay home and play Xbox and you're still getting money to go to work even though you're not going to work. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about the 40s when we could have a candle until 8 p.m. and we weren't allowed to go outside because someone was going to drop bombs on us. And there's other story, and we didn't even have running water. It's like, maybe we can get through this. You're right. Maybe we can get through this.
Yeah, that's probably right. For me, the worst part is the fact that we cannot travel. We can travel.
Yeah, that's now, the same for us.
But it's a little bit too expensive at the moment, for instance, if I want to go to Brazil. So I have not been in Brazil since the beginning of the COVID.
Right.
So I have not seen my family. So that's definitely like the worst part. Yep. But hopefully next year, the beginning of next year.
Yeah. It's a
funny... I need to go and grab my original Game Boy Color. It's there at my mom's.
Right, before she before she has a garage sale or something silly.
I know where it is. It's at my mom's. It's like, I told her, look, keep it there. It's my original Game Boy Color and my original Pokemon Yellow. They're there, and I want them now to add to the collection.
And don't mail them, because if they never turn up, it'll be the worst thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what's the plan then with Game Boys? I mean, are you just kind of like, pardon me, just like punching stuff out? I mean, I see you kind of do commissions and bits and pieces for people, do you?
Yes and no. Yep. It all depends on how my work, my real-time work is, like my real job, real lifetime work is. Yeah. Like when I get really, really busy at uni, I tend to slow down and not take too many commissions. Yep. So for instance, at the moment, I'm probably not taking any extra because I am doing a work for William, Baron Priceman.
Yeah.
And it's quite a large one. So I'm probably not going to take anyone else at the moment. Mm. For instance, I do things on the side. So I have them ready if people want to. For instance, the Game Boy Micro vinyl stickers.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday I was producing, making a few here so I can offer to people like a limit run. Like, I have five of these DMG lookalike ones. If anyone wants to grab, let me know.
But in general, you're just enjoying it for yourself mostly.
Mostly.
And it's all just like, you're not even covering your costs, you're just buying and enjoying, and if you get enough left over, then you kind of push it on. I mean, some people, I think they kind
exactly.
of get, some people are getting high on their own supply, they're able to sort of create three and keep one because, you know, the raffling off of two covers their costs and that sort of stuff. But that's not you. You're just like, if you keep it, you keep it, if you don't, you don't.
Yeah, most of them, I just keep them here. I manage to get something very, very cheap, and it's not, for instance, at the moment I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Game Boy Colors. So I will probably not add an extra Game Boy Color to my collection. So if I find, if I manage to get like a cheap Game Boy Color, I might offer it as a custom build to someone.
Yeah.
But I'm not actively looking for
them,
so probably not.
Tell me a bit about this GBA slab. This is a Zypher design. It's what's the go?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
For playing, it's probably my favorite thing for playing.
Mm.
It's the slab and the pocket collar. Those are my two daily drivers, basically.
So the slab is a like a 3D printed.
It's all 3D printed.
Right. So it looks a bit like a slightly midget pocket, and you basically transplant a GBA SP into it. Is that correct?
SP.
Right. Yeah, do you use correct. Like the original size? You probably upgraded, you know, lens and screen, but it's all the same sort of dimensions and stuff as SP.
Yeah, there is no, it's not like the Pocket Color where you need to trim the board or right. cut the board of the Game Boy Color to fit inside the pocket.
Yeah.
Like the way Cypher designed it, it's kind of everything is a drop in, which is fantastic. You do need to do quite a lot of soldering because you need to use his custom boots on PCB.
Right. So
you can align, because actually you're using Game Boy Pocket buttons on this lab.
Right.
And but for me, the perfect thing about it, for instance, if you compare with the Boxy Pixel flat GBA, it's fantastic because it's like aluminum and etc. But when you want to play Game Boy Color games, you still put them on the bottom and they are sticking out.
Right.
The way Cypher designed it, he put the board flipped up. So actually, when you put a Game Boy Color or a GBA game, they go on the back of the console.
Right.
And there is not anything is protruding out of it. So it's, okay. everything is compact and it's fantastic.
That's really
cool. It's a beautiful design. Yeah. Cypher did a fantastic design on it.
Yeah, neat. Love it. It's just
same so goes for the Pocket Color. Like Cypher also made there, and it's awesome. Like the Pocket Color is awesome. The form factor of the Game Boy Pocket is brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, I like the Pocket too. It feels sort of the best. I mean, I find the GBA so comfortable, but the Pocket, it feels like it was its final form, you know, like even though it wasn't backlit and stuff, it fits the pocket. It fits in your pocket. I know it sounds silly. It fits in your pocket nicely. It seems to just be that good size for a person, you know, especially after DMG. Like you can imagine sitting on a train with a DMG and someone's like, what the hell is that?
What's this brick?
Yeah, that's right. Even though I love the DMG, my wife and I play a lot of Tetris against each other. I've done a couple of, you know, IPS mods for us to purely to play Tetris. She's getting quite good. But when I have a pocket, I was like, it just feels comfortable. It's so much lighter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love it. Do you have a Pocket Color?
No, I don't have any of those. I don't have any of those hybrids, unfortunately. I haven't sort of got around to sort of delving into that, especially if it's not made here in Australia.
It's not easy.
It's very unlikely that I will ever own it because of shipping and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Pocket Color is not a very easy mod because you need to. It's basically a Game Boy Color motherboard fit inside of a Game Boy Pocket shell. So there is actually this amount, like I don't know, like 2 centimeters that you need to trim off the board.
Right.
So you need to remove all the components of the area, and then you need to reposition the power switch, because the Game Boy Color, the power switch is on the side. Mm-hmm. On the Game Boy Pocket is on the top. So you need to reposition.
So you've lost me already. That sounds like way too much work. I will definitely
destroy it. It's a lot of soldering and rewiring, but it's fantastic when it's done, when it works, and you have this small Game Boy Pocket with the playing Game Boy Color games. It's like a dream. It's pretty good.
What I really like is Jamesy's slim DMG with the printed. Oh man, that thing is.
Yeah.
You know, I when I saw it, it's a bit like you know that movie Gone in 60 Seconds. So it was like with the Mustang, and there was the version with Nicolas Cage and Angelina Jolie. Yeah, well, no, I don't think so. Because I
don't think so. No.
The original one, like from the 70s, you know, it's just it's a 12-minute intro with like a 90-minute car chase. And that was like the original Mustang. So that's like the original DMG. And then in the new one, that's a similar Mustang, but it's all silver and low and hot rodded. And that's like, that's like what they did. They took this Mustang and kind of like made it, whoa, that's wicked. And that's kind of what, you know, what his looks like. It's sleek.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to do printer.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. And resin does so good. I can't remember who did it. Someone did a resin clear print We'll talk about this person later on. A resin clear print of it, and it's just, oh my goodness, just amazing.
Yeah, I saw some people go a slab resin clear shell printed from I don't know where it's from. It's from somewhere in China. It's beautiful. It's awesome. I was like, oh, that's my dream. I want one of those.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. We've kind of covered a bunch of stuff. If there's anything else you kind of want to talk about, then now's your opportunity. I mean, we're going to do a bunch of shout outs and stuff. Unless there's other hobby stuff you want to share, or we can kind of.
You could talk about cats. No, I'm joking.
we have a cat. He's not a bad dude. He comes and goes in my good and bad book. He just recently was, we have one of those inflatable spas. It's quite large. Like I'm about 178 centimeters and I can kind of, it's round. I can lay in it like under the roof. My head touches one side, my feet touches the other. So like four people could be in there quite comfortably. And it's inflatable, which sounds like a kiddie pool, but it's not, because it gets up to about 40 degrees. It doesn't blow spa jets, but it has bubble ring in it. So it's like, it's nice, you know. And yeah. My cat is allowed to sleep on the bed because my wife lets him, and he comes right up. And I'm like,
it's like mine. Like
I don't, mine. I'm not that keen on animals in my bed. he's always taking attention from my wife when I should be getting the attention. He kind of he just looks at me like, you know, I got this right. I'm like, yeah, I do. And there's nothing I can do about it because you're kind of cute. And I do actually like you, but don't let anybody else know that. But he was, and so I was like, don't encourage him up to the spa. He's got claws. This stuff's quite thick. And then I'm sort of in here where we are now in my room playing Mega Drive or something.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, can you come here, please? I'm like, well, what's going on? I'm kind of busy. No, can you come here? And she's got a finger on the spa. No. So he had jumped up and sat there, and my wife freaked out, and she's like, get off, get off, get off. And she sort of like pushed him. And as he's gone, he's like, whoa. And sort of one of his claws has just caught it and put the tiniest hole in. And it kind of, I looked at it, I was like, we'll put a bit of tape over it. And over about a day, I probably lost about 10%. I was like, okay, now I'm annoyed with him. And eventually I kind of let most of the air come out. I use a bit of soapy spray to see the bubble and a bit of like shoe goo, just a couple of layers, and sort of smear it in. I think we sorted it, but him and I weren't friends for about 2 weeks, but I think we're friends now because the spa isn't wrecked.
Back to normality. Yeah, we have two here.
Two cats. Are they a particular breed that you have?
One of them is a mix.
Yeah.
Mixed guy.
Yeah,
and the girl is a Maine Coon.
Oh right,
so a very large cat.
Right, is he one of those cats that's a bit like probably should be in a jungle and you're a bit of a wild breed?
The Maine Coon is one of the very very considered one of the very wild breeds. So right. They get quite large.
Yeah,
and they are quite feral liking.
Do you have scratches up and down your arms?
Yeah, when she plays the rough game. She goes very hard.
Oh man, some of them.
It's like just a rugby player.
Yeah. Some of them are just rascals. Do you follow the rugby?
I don't follow it. I love this sport. Like I'm quite fascinated about it. I always wanted to play it.
Right.
But I always wanted to learn how to play it, but I don't follow it. No.
Of course, you had football, I think so you weren't really allowed to follow anything else.
Well, I'm crap on football, so
I think most of the world is. It's just it's great to watch, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, I do like to watch it. I have the team that I follow in Brazil, etc.
Yeah,
but I like sport wise. I love martial arts.
Right. Right. So, did you study any kind of like Brazilian jiu-jitsu or anything growing up?
Not Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I did capoeira. Capoeira is the Brazilian style.
Yeah.
I did quite a few years of kickboxing.
Yep.
A little bit of taekwondo when I was young.
Yep. Well, that's probably enough to keep me out of trouble.
Yeah, true. And I love going to the gym. Like, it's one of the things that I cannot live without it. Right. So I go every day. I train a powerlift style training.
Okay.
So because I quite like Olympic weightlifting and powerlifting.
Yeah.
Something that I'm fascinated about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what did you lockdown just like lift your huge cat instead or something?
Yeah. Yeah. During lockdown. Yeah. During lockdown was tricky. Actually, that's one of the big things. Like, I didn't know what to do when you got to exercise. And I was like, I can run. I'm just going to run.
Yeah.
And yeah, that went very well.
Yeah. You still look at the house going like, well, what can I lift? You're like trying to, you know, put a couch on either end of a broomstick or something like that. You realize I've started like recently, I do a lot of cycling, but you know, my sort of upper body and around my shoulders gets a bit tight and my lower back. And I've just in the last couple of months got back into some kettlebells. There was a time where I think I was quite strong and fit, and I've got back into some kettlebells, and it doesn't take a heavy weight, just that range of movement and just a bit of just letting things move, because you don't realize during your day, almost everybody's job, unless they're doing a labor or something, a laborish, you kind of just end up just stuck. Your body gets stuck in these positions for, you know, long periods, and we forget to kind of just turn and twist and open things up. And it's just so good to feel that. Even over a couple of months, I can touch my toes, but to be able to touch my toes without kind of going, it's nice. And people don't realize when you get older, your metabolism stops and things just, I fall off my bike every 3 weeks, and it takes about 4 weeks for this wrist or my left wrist always must be what I put down first. And it just becomes, you got to do things differently.
Yeah. That's true.
I think people have done, especially people have done a lot of powerlifting and that sort of powerlifting. It doesn't even have to be heavy weights, but you use so much of your body to get it from the floor to above your shoulders. It's a really good.
Yeah.
And you can do sort of, you know, 15, 20 lifts, and it's such a good workout for your entire body.
Yeah. Even
as your technique is correct. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the main thing. Like, techniques need to be spot on, otherwise you can injure yourself quite easily. And you don't need to go very heavy.
Mm.
You actually put some weight that will put some, you will need some sort of a strong motion to move it.
Yeah.
And basically do it for as many repetitions until you cannot do it anymore.
Mm.
And that's all good.
Mm.
Mm. But it's a little bit scary.
It's a bit scary?
Like, when people start, like you see someone doing a snatch.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to break myself doing this. And yeah, you need someone to teach you how to do it properly. For it's not for exercise that I don't like. I like to do stuff that I know that I will be doing correctly.
Mm.
Like I love to do deadlifts, squats and stuff like that, because I'm a little bit more under control.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm more of a squat guy, you know, get it up on the shoulders and sort of squat. And it's you kind of like, you feel strong. And you're like, okay, this is my wheelhouse. Definitely. I played a bit of rugby and cycled a lot. Yeah.
Ah, nice.
All right, buddy. Well, I guess all the Game Boy people aren't listening now because we're talking about manly stuff.
all this stuff.
But you got to stay healthy. You can't just sit at home, you know, these days.
Yeah, that's true. Like playing games is fantastic, but you need to keep your body in a good shape as well. Like I wish I could just sit here and play for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
But it's not reality, right?
I'm the same. I find
so
that
you mix a little bit of everything. You do some exercise,
You
do some mental exercise, and then you feed your internal child with some games.
You're trying to be the child and the parent in your own world. It can be challenging. Some of us are doing better than others. All right, we might move on then, and I always do a little bit of a shout out at the end, and then give my guest tonight, obviously being you, an opportunity to mention a few people. So tonight, and I was going to mention it before when we were talking about resin prints and things. So this is, there's no way to say other post other than B_2_3_N. Just some beautiful photography, and I believe now that we were talking about it, he's got the glassy DMG pocket build. He's it's referring beautiful. To Jamesy. It is so. It's a printed, a resin printed shell. It's It's amazing.
Is that resin printed?
I believe is it not? I might be wrong. I was out of the battery hatch. Let me just double.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, I'm checking now. Custom 3D printed shell by PCBWay. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. It's just freaking gorgeous. It really is freaking gorgeous.
Yeah, I do.
Just some nice pictures of some beautiful Game Boys. Yeah,
quality photography, man.
B23N mod, Game Boy mods. There's a couple of underscores in there. But yeah, you'll see it. So yeah, check this person out. That'll be obviously be in the show notes. And we've kind of through conversation, and you know, feel free to double up, but we've mentioned like Nintendo UI, Next Stop Please, Esoteric Mods, Cypher Design, Jamesy Plays. And I'm sure you've got more to throw on there. So this is an opportunity for you to kind of kick your own can, or if you've got any kind of, you know, sellers and distributors that you work with and you like to help out, maybe your mum makes beautiful cake and you want to get people to go to her website and buy the cake. This is all about you. So the conch is yours.
Well, my mom, she does have an Instagram, but that's part of another story. But I wish, I want to give a shout out to a few guys, particularly the Scottish guys, the ones that really, really helped me, like talk to me every day, and really, really nice guys. Like this Game Boy Gary. So Game Boy _ Gary.
Yeah.
Guy's a legend. It's really, really nice guy. We worked together quite a few times. There's Ace Mods. Ace Mods is another really, really freaking good guy.
Yeah.
And there is one guy. He started Instagram not long ago. It grew quite quickly. It's because, and I think it's deserved, because he's such a nice guy. We worked together quite a few times. It's Noodle Mods. So if you like food and if you like Game Boys,
yeah,
you should check it. Like there's a lot of photos of pizza, pasta, and Game Boys, and some beautiful photography. And the guy, he's from Germany, and Martin is a fantastic guy. He's super fun. We talk almost every day. Yeah, and he's a very, very nice guy.
Yeah, his pictures do make me hungry.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's good stuff. No worries. All right, buddy. Oh man, his pictures make me super hungry.
It's good, huh?
Well, it's almost my dinner time, fortunately. All right, dude. No worries. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate you getting up at a bit after 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. I hope I haven't sort of disturbed your morning routine much.
Not at all.
I think when we first started talking, you said it was dark, and I'm going to guess if you look out your window, sunny now. Okay, so
sunny now.
That was a useless part of the day anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to hit the gym now.
Yep, awesome. All right, look, thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no.
No, thank you for the invitation. That was fantastic. That's so fun to talk to you.
Yeah, your Insta is really it's always really kind of I guess positive and happy. And you know, when I first sort of we started this conversation, and he's like, "Hello," and I was like, "That's exactly how I imagine that dude to be." The sunshine and happiness, and that's really great. So keep on doing what you're doing, and I'm sure we'll all anybody that's listening and has never seen your Instagram before, I would hope they would go over and have a squiz now and just enjoy.
Thank you so much, Scott.
All right, buddy. Well, you and I will be in touch, and keep being real and being super happy.
Amen. Talk later, man.
Okay, buddy. See ya.
Cheers. See ya.